Thank you. Thank you. Hey. Wow, look at that. Hi. Hello. Thank you very much. Hi. So the joke about the podium here is that this was the only non-USB-C compatible podium they could find for me. So as many of you know, I'm an activist with the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Next month, I start my 25th year there. And I know I'm hardly unbiased, but as far as I'm concerned, there is no group anywhere on Earth that does the work of the caliber that EFF does for our digital rights. And I'm an activist there, and so for the past quarter of a century, my job has been fighting something that I call the war on general purpose computing. Now, if you were at 28C3 14 years ago, you may have heard me give a talk with that title. Those are the trenches I have been in with EFF since my very first day on the job. That was a day when I flew to Los Angeles and crashed the inaugural meeting of something called the Broadcast Protection Discussion Group. This was an unholy alliance of tech companies, media companies, broadcasters, and cable operators, and they'd gathered at the invitation of this lavishly corrupt American congressman, a man called Billy Tozen, who had promised them a new regulation, a rule that would ban the manufacture and sale of digital computers unless they had been damaged to specifications set by that group, specifications for technical measures to block the execution of code that their shareholders did not want to see executed in the wild. Now, that rule was called the broadcast flag, and it actually did pass through the American regulatory system. The Federal Communications Commission passed it as a rule, so we sued the FCC. We overturned the rule. So, thank you. Yeah, it was a good day. So, we won that skirmish, but my friends, I have very bad news, although it's not news that will surprise you. Despite wins like that important one, we have been losing the war on general purpose computers for the past 25 years. But that's why I've come to Hamburg today, because after decades of throwing myself against a locked door, the door that leads to a new good internet, one that delivers the technological self-determination of the old good internet and the ease of use of Web 2.0 that let our normie friends come and join the party, that door has been unlocked. Today, it is open a crack. I mean, it's open a crack. And here's the weirdest part. The guy who unlocked that door is Donald Trump. Now, he didn't do it on purpose, but thanks to Trump's incontinent belligerence, we are on the cusp of the post-American internet, a new digital nervous system for the 21st century. An internet that we can build together without worrying about America's demands or its priorities. Now, don't get me wrong, I am not happy about Trump or his policies. But as my friend Joey Davila likes to say, when life gives you SARS, you make sarsaparilla. The only thing worse than living through all the terror that Trump has unleashed on America and the world would be going through all of that and not salvaging anything of value from it. So that's what I'm here to talk to you about today. The post-American internet that we can wrestle away from Trump's chaos. The post-American internet that is possible because Trump has mobilized new coalition partners to fight on our side. Now, in politics, coalitions are everything. Anytime you see a group of people suddenly make a breakthrough in making a change that they failed to make for years and years, it's a sure bet that they have found coalition partners, new allies who don't want all the same things that they want, but want enough of the same things to fight on their side. And that's where Trump came from. He's at the front of a coalition of billionaires, white nationalists, Christian bigots, authoritarians, conspiratorialists, imperialists, and of course, self-described libertarians who've got such a scorching case of low-tax brainworms that they'd vote for Mussolini if he'd take 5 cents off their tax bill. And that's what's got me, yeah. And that's what's got me so excited, is that we've got a new coalition in the war on general purpose computers. A coalition that includes digital rights activists who've been on the lines for decades, but also now people who want to turn America's tech trillions into billions for their own economy, and national security hawks who are quite rightly worried about digital sovereignty. Now, my thesis here is that this is an unstoppable coalition, which is good news, because for the first time in decades, I think victory is in our grasp. So let me explain. 14 years ago, I stood in front of this group and I talked about the war on general purpose computing. Now, that's my snappy name for the fight, but the boring name that they use in legislatures for this fight is something called anti-circumvention law. Under anti-circumvention law, it is a crime to alter the functioning of a digital product or service unless the manufacturer approves of your modification. And crucially, this is true whether or not your modification violates any other law. Anti-circumvention law, it originates in the USA with Section 1201 of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act of 1998, which establishes a felony punishable by a 5-year prison sentence and a $500,000 fine for a first offense for bypassing an access control to a copyrighted work. So practically speaking, if you design a service or device with even the flimsiest of systems to prevent modification of its application code or its firmware, it is a felony, it is a jailable felony to modify that code or that firmware. It's also a felony to disclose information about how to bypass the access control, which means that pen testers who even describe how they access a device or a system face criminal liability. And so anti-circumvention law allows any manufacturer to trivially turn their product into a no-go zone, criminalizing the act of investigating its defects, criminalizing the act of disclosing its defects, and criminalizing the act of remediating its defects. This is a law that Jay Freeman quite rightly calls felony contempt of business model. Now, anti-circumvention law became the law of the land in America in 1998 when Bill Clinton signed the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. But before you start snickering at those stupid Americans, I want you to know this. Every other country in the world has passed a law just like this one in the years since. Now, here in the EU, we got it through Article 6 of the Copyright Directive in 2001. Now, it makes a certain kind of twisted sense for America to enact a law like this. After all, they are the world's tech powerhouse, home to the biggest, most powerful tech companies in the world. By making it illegal to modify digital products without the manufacturer's permission, America enhances the rent-extracting power of the most valuable companies on its stock exchanges. But why would Europe pass a law like this? After all, Europe is a massive tech importer. By extending legal protections to tech companies that want to steal European users' data and money, the EU facilitates a one-way transfer of value from Europe to America. So why would Europe do this? Well, let me tell you about the circumstances under which all the other countries came to enact their anti-circumvention laws, and maybe you'll spot a pattern that answers the question. Australia got its anti-circumvention law through the US-Australia Free Trade Agreement, which obliges Australia to enact anti-circumvention law. Mexico and Canada got their anti-circumvention law through the US-Mexico-Canada Free Trade Agreement, which obliges Canada and Mexico to enact anti-circumvention laws. Andean nations like Chile got their anti-circumvention laws through US bilateral free trade agreements, which oblige them to enact anti-circumvention laws. And the Central American nations got their anti-circumvention laws through CAFTA, the Central American Free Trade Agreement with the USA, which obliges them to enact anti-circumvention laws. Now, I assume you spotted the pattern by now. The U.S. Trade Representative has forced every one of America's trading partners to enact an anti-circumvention law to facilitate the extraction of their own people's data and money by American tech firms. But of course, this only raises a further question. Why would every other country in the world agree to let America steal its people's money and data and block its domestic tech sector from making interoperable products that prevents this theft? Well, here's an anecdote that might unravel the riddle. Many years ago, in the years before Viktor Orban took over Hungary, I used to guest lecture at a PhD program in political science at the Central European University in Budapest. And one summer, after I'd lectured to my students on anti-circumvention law, one of them approached me. Now, they had been the information minister of a Central American country during the CAFTA negotiations. And one day, they'd received a call from the trade negotiator, calling from the CAFTA trade negotiating room. And the negotiator said, "You know how you told me not to give the Americans anti-circumvention law under any circumstances? Well, they've told me they will not take our coffee unless we give them anti-circumvention. And I'm sorry, we just can't lose the U.S. coffee market. Our economy could collapse, so we're going to get anti-circumvention. I'm really sorry. That's it. That's why every government in the world allowed U.S. big tech companies to declare open season on their own people's private data and ready cash. The alternative was tariffs. Well, I don't know if you've heard, but we have tariffs now. I mean, if someone threatens to burn your house down unless you follow their orders, and they burn your house down anyway, you don't have to keep following their orders. Okay. So, happy Liberation Day? So far, every country in